Radio Prague News. The Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer has confirmed that he will be traveling to the UN Climate Change Conference in Copenhagen. The Party of European Socialists group at the European Parliament has re-elected their current leader at a conference held in Prague, and Prime Minister Fischer has undergone special security training. At a lower house session on Monday, Prime Minister Jan Fischer confirmed he will be traveling to the UN Climate Change Summit in Copenhagen. President Václav Klaus, a known opponent of the global warming theory, will not be attending the conference. A Danish translation of his book on the issue has been available in bookstores in Denmark since last week. The conference is meant to generate a new document that will replace the Kyoto Protocol and help reduce carbon dioxide emissions. Delegations from 192 countries have been invited to the summit that started on Monday and will end on December 18th. A conference of the Party of European Socialists group at the European Parliament, which began in Prague on Monday, has drawn some 1,000 delegates. On Monday, the party's head and former Danish Prime Minister, Poul Nyrup Rasmussen, was re-elected by a strong majority. The head of the Social Democrats, Jiří Paroubek, said in a speech opening the gathering that had the Czech elections not been postponed, he most likely would have been talking to the delegation as the country's prime minister. The goal of the two-day conference held at the Výstaviště Trade Fair Hall in Prague is to increase socialist standing in Europe. On Sunday, TV Nova reported that Prime Minister Jan Fischer had undergone special security training. Members of the Czech Police Security Service Division instructed Mr. Fischer, who is the first Czech Prime Minister to receive such training, in tactics of how to react in the case of a violent attack. The Prime Minister's family has been under police protection since spring of this year, after police received information that members of the right-wing extremist group White Justice were planning an attack on Mr. Fischer's son. According to Mr. Fischer, there have been two occasions of serious threats against his family. A court in Plzeň on Monday sentenced four members of the Zadamsky Gang, a 12-member group active in the Czech Republic since 1999. The group blackmailed entrepreneurs in the western part of the country, forcing them to pay protection money. Two of the members received one-year prison sentences for disorderly conduct, while the remaining two were released on parole. Earlier this year, seven of the Zadamsky Gang's members were acquitted at a Plzeň court trial. The Supreme Court then overruled the regional court's decision. And now for the weather. After Monday, daytime temperatures will drop to 5 degrees Celsius with a chance of rain. My name is Sarah Barufka, and this was today's news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, Ondřej Liška is elected Green Party chairman, but can the party avoid fading into political irrelevance? Why are even Czech doctors turning down the chance to be vaccinated against swine flu? And in the wake of that weekend whitewash at the hands of Spain, we speak to Czech Davis Cup team member David Berdych, who's graceful in defeat.
The Spanish team is really the best in the world, and they just prove it, and they play fantastic. So all the credit to them, and they just deserve to win.
All that and more coming up in the next few minutes. Stay tuned. The acting chairman of the Green Party, Ondřej Liška, has been confirmed in the post at a Green Party conference, defeating two other contenders by a large margin. While the new Green Party leadership believes it now has enough support to curb internal infighting and address waning voter support, leading the party to success in the next elections will be an uphill struggle. Jan Richter has the story.
Thank you.
The newly elected chairman of the Green Party, Ondřej Liška, thanked the party conference for support in Brno on Saturday. After a six-month term as the party's acting chair, he received 170 out of 252 votes, defeating his nearest rival, Matěj Stropnický, by a landslide. After the vote, the new Green leader told Czech Radio it was his vision that had persuaded the delegates.
I have to say the number of votes I received was a pleasant surprise for me, because I did not expect such massive support and so strong a mandate. I appreciate it a lot, and as I said in my thank you speech, it's not a mandate for me, but for the concept I presented here, and that concept won.
After the general elections of 2006, former leader Martin Bursík took the Greens into a coalition government and began to pursue a liberal rather than core environmental agenda. This led to the party's near collapse when two of its MPs joined the opposition in the lower house of parliament and eventually helped topple the government in March this year. The Greens manifesto, as presented by Ondřej Liška, a party with a strong anti-corruption message and a serious reform drive, might have won at the party conference. However, it no longer seems to attract much popular support. Despite backing from former president Václav Havel, polls repeatedly suggest the Greens will not pass the 5% threshold needed to enter the lower house at the next general elections. And political analyst Jiří Pehe believes the weekend's conference did little to change that.
I think that many voters who abandoned the Greens and who would maybe consider voting for them again wanted to hear a different message than what they heard at the Congress, where Mr. Liška said that the Green Party is a centrist party which will choose its coalition partners depending on its priorities and so on. This was a rather vague message. I think that many voters who abandoned the Greens wanted to hear that the Greens this time around, if they make it into the parliament, will behave in a more principled way.
Green leader Ondřej Liška admitted on Saturday that the party spent too much time and energy on infighting. The 6 months left before next spring's elections will show whether he is able to leave all this behind, or whether under his leadership the party will sink into insignificance.
And that report on the fading fortunes and the future hopes of the Green Party was by Jan Richter. Vaccination against swine flu has been underway in the Czech Republic for 2 weeks, but surprisingly perhaps, interest has been rather muted. Even doctors themselves aren't too keen. A poll released last week suggested that a majority of GPs had no interest in getting the vaccine, saying that vaccination had come too late in the face of the growing epidemic, and even that the vaccine had not been tested enough. Now the health minister has rejected such claims, slamming sceptics for having too little information. Jan Wellinger has the details.
The swine flu has reached epidemic proportions in 4 of 14 regions in the Czech Republic, and the number of cases in the coming days is only expected to rise. Yet even now, many health professionals simply are not worried. Despite being among the first eligible to receive vaccination against the disease along with the chronically ill, children over the age of 10 and pregnant women, many GPs will not be getting the shot, that information made clear in a poll by the Aspectio agency released last week. In the poll, a majority said they considered swine flu a media bubble, although only a sixth of the 440 or so queried said explicitly they wouldn't recommend the vaccine to patients. On Sunday, those views provoked sharp reaction from the health minister, Dana Juráskova, who slammed GPs for simply not knowing the facts.
I'm going to speak on the level and say that I think this is the influence of the media, as well as of some so-called epidemiologists and vaccine specialists presented alongside health officials. When it comes to the media, information is often presented out of context. If we consider the poll, let me say that many GPs are professionals that don't have the facts and don't even look for them. It might interest you to know that 60% of them don't log onto the internet and therefore can't even access information on the pandemic on our website.
And according to the health minister, the decision by doctors to not get the swine flu shot has an overall negative effect.
I don't want to suggest GPs would be doing this on purpose, but they don't realize that their opinion affects the behavior of their patients.
As it stands, 1 million people, a tenth of the Czech population, are eligible for a jab against swine flu and are recommended to do so if they can, with the health minister stating on Sunday that of those who received the vaccination in the Czech Republic, none had suffered serious side effects. Officials, meanwhile, expect the swine flu epidemic will hit its peak in mid to late December in the Czech Republic.
Jan Velinger with that report on vaccination against swine flu. Now, Ian Willoughby is very much fighting fit and joins us with the sports news.
Thanks, Rob. Well, the main story in sport today is, of course, the news that the Czech Republic have been beaten in the final of the Davis Cup by defending champion Spain. The Czechs last won the competition in 1980, when they were still part of Czechoslovakia, and there was great anticipation ahead of the final in Barcelona. And things started brightly on Friday, when Tomáš Berdych performed well against Rafael Nadal in the first set of the opening singles rubber. However, the Spanish star took that set, and it was pretty much all downhill from there from the Czech perspective. Radek Štěpánek went two sets up against David Ferrer before losing in five sets. That result left the Czechs with a mountain to climb in the best-of-five series, and whatever hope remained was extinguished on Saturday when Feliciano López and Fernando Verdasco beat Berdych and Štěpánek in straight sets, giving the Spaniards an unassailable lead. On Sunday, Czech coach Jaroslav Navratil fielded Jan Hajek and Lukáš Dlouhý in place of his top two players. Both were defeated, meaning the final ended 5-love to Spain. Radek Štěpánek was gracious in defeat.
The Spanish simply deserved to win. They were better. And all we can do is take our hats off to how they performed and congratulate them. Next year, we will try to repeat what we achieved in getting to the final and take that extra step. Of course, we wanted to do more this time, but that happens.
Radek Štěpánek. In a moment, we'll have a longer interview with his teammate, Tomáš Berdych. But first, some news of other sport, and the Czech footballer Tomáš Rosický must feel cursed sometimes. After being out for over a year with a serious knee injury, the Arsenal midfielder, who's 29, now finds himself once again consigned to the stands after picking up a groin strain in the first half of the Gunners' 2-0 win over Stoke on Saturday. Speaking after the game, Arsenal manager Arsène Wenger said Rosický was devastated, and so was he. Moving on to ice hockey, and Plzeň have moved to the top of the Czech Extraliga after beating Mladá Boleslav 4-3 on Sunday. The West Bohemian side are now 2 points ahead of both Vítkov and Zlín, with the former in second place on goal difference. In other ice hockey news, coach Vladimír Růžička has just announced the Czech squad for Moscow's Channel 1 Cup. The Czechs' last competition before the Winter Olympics in Vancouver. Included in the squad is Jaromír Jágr. That's all the sports news we have for you today, but now let's return to our main story, the defeat of the Czech Republic in the final of the Davis Cup. On Monday morning, the Czech team arrived home at Prague Airport, which is where I caught up with Tomáš Berdych. My first question, a couple of days later, how does he look back at the tie with Spain?
I would say it's still the day or too late after losing the final. It's still too quick, but I would say if I'm going to look in this situation, like in general and in the past, I would say it's pretty good achievement, especially for Czech tennis, because it's after 29 years, and it's pretty big for a Czech team, and I'm really happy for that. But on the other side, we went to Barcelona with a little bit bigger expectations, but as we saw, the Spanish team is really the best in the world, and they just prove it, and they play fantastic. So, yeah, all the credit to them, and they just deserve to win.
And where do you think it went wrong for the Czech team?
Well, I would say that we had quite a lot of luck in the whole competition during the whole year since the first match against France, Argentina, then in Croatia, the tennis luck, and this kind of thing a little bit disappear in the final, because I played really close set against Rafael in his first match after losing in London. I lost it pretty close. Then then he starts to play fantastic, as everybody saw, and that's how he's playing on the clay. Radek had the same. He was two sets to love, up playing amazing tennis, but then all of a sudden it just turned to the other way and he lost his match. So yeah, it was really small differences which just went to the side of Spain, and that's it. You know, they are better, so they deserve to win.
You lost 5-0, which kind of looks bad, but I think people who understand tennis haven't been critical of you. For example, one of today's papers called you heroes. What positives do you take from the final?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, on the one side, it looks terrible, the 5-love, but I have to say that, we lost it 3-love, you know, because everybody just need the 3 points, and whatever happens then, that's it, you know. As captain said, that it's pretty good to give a chance to the other players, because they deserve to be in the team. They've been there, and for the Czech team, it's not so many players who can say that they played in the final of Davis Cup. So, you know, that's a lot of experience for them, because they can build on this. They can have the experience for next matches to play when the score is not going to be decided. So that's a very good opportunity to have, and we are happy for that.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, broadcasting in 6 languages across the globe. Now, another chance to hear Jan Wellinger's interview with passionate golfer Alan Babitsky.
This week, my guest in one-on-one is the Czech golf pro Alan Babitsky. A skilled businessman, but also a former dancer, choreographer, and downhill skier, Babitsky picked up the sport of golf only at the age of 28. But within 10 years, he had built up a solid reputation. He even won the World Golfers Championship in Thailand in 2004, one of the most prestigious competitions for amateur players. Well, recently I caught up with Alan Babitsky to discuss his career. I first asked how much he knew about golf the first time he ever played.
Absolutely nothing. Zippo, as they say in the States. Today, if you invite somebody to come to golf course or play golf, they know at least a little bit. They know Tiger Woods, maybe. They know 18 holes. I didn't know any of that.
And how was it that you came to be on this golf course?
Well, I worked as a marketing manager for Pepsi, and we agreed to sign the contract with Carl Stein, 1994, I think it was. And they were opening the back nine in September, and I was there in October to sign the contract. And obviously, as you know, all golf enthusiasts, they forced me to try it. So that's how I pick up golf.
Now, was it in this first game, or was it in games that followed, that you sort of caught the spark, that you realized, hey, this is a sport that I really like?
Well, it's close to the situation when you say good deeds for bad reasons. You know, I didn't know what to enjoy about it. I just didn't feel anything except one little thing, that it worked well. Somehow I found something which immediately worked. You know, like I never missed the golf ball in a normal situation. I did miss it in like, you know, deep rough with open love wedge 6 years later, but the first lesson I had, I didn't miss a golf ball, and I never shot over 100. There was something that worked.
Sports, of course, were nothing new to you. You did dance and choreography. You were also a semi-pro skier.
Probably the dance was the better part of sort of, you know, being able to hit the first shots decent and copy the movement of the pro and remember the rhythm and a couple of other things maybe as well, because when somebody tells you, you know, keep your shoulder, I don't know, up or high or anything, or your elbow, if you're not a dancer, it's something new to you.
How long did it take for you to advance your game?
Well, the only thing I remember really was that I spent from the first day, which was something like mid-October, I spent almost every night at the indoor facility, which back then was at Strahov. that facility was closed in January, and at the same time, the Erpet Golf Indoor Facility was open in 1995. It was on the way from my office to home, so I spent every night practicing there. In April, I think it was, I played my first tournament in Karlsbad, in Karlovy Vary, and I shot something like 95. That was the first sort of competitive experience.
And all of this intensive practice was taking place while you were holding a regular day job.
Yeah, of course. It was the same thing until 2004, November, when it was, back then it was a 10th sort of anniversary of hitting the first golf ball, and I happened to win a worldwide tournament which is called World Golfers Championships, which is organized by the Swedish ice hockey player Tomba Johansson, and it's like the equivalent of the World Championships, but with your handicaps. So you play in categories, and your result depends on your game, obviously, but also they deduct handicaps. And I happened to win it. So and that was the reason I decided that I want to go entrepreneur and establish the company that I'm co-owning and working for now. But until then, so it was long 10 years of being a manager of a company, working 10 hours a day and then practicing at night.
Tell me a little bit about the culture of golf in the Czech Republic. Obviously, during the communist years, it wasn't something that had any kind of tradition here, but there was a tradition before the 1948 putsch, wasn't there?
There's a beautiful book called Golf in the Czech Republic, from which I know that Czech Republic was the only country in the old communist bloc which had a little bit of golf surviving the socialistic era. We had, I think, three courses here, and something like 1,800 players when I started. In 1994, there was less than 2,000 players and something like five courses. And since then, the golf has grown. Czech Republic has become the fastest growing golf country in the world now. It's the official result of some studies. And now we have over 40,000 players, over 80 courses, and something like 126 clubs. It's been a big boom. The culture, obviously, when you have such a big growth, there is some, as we call them in Czech, child illnesses. Sometimes the growth is too fast. Sometimes the people get the certificates too early. Sometimes the promoters, in order to satisfy the client, don't respect the golf traditions. But overall, you know, lots of good players at the same time. Normally you say that in a golf environment, you've got over 90% of all players never breaking 100. And we did a little study in I think, 1998, and most of the people playing in the Czech Republic break 100.
Why is that?
Well, that's a very good question, which probably leads us to why is golf so popular in here. Because people are playful and they like sports and they like to do it in nature. So you know, that combines for golf. And at the same time, it's a very good platform for marketing. So all entrepreneurs and all big companies utilize golf as a communications or CRM platform. And that's probably it.
You've been a dancer, you've been a business manager. Golf seems to have been the major decision in your life. Can you foresee any other surprises? Is there anything else that you may still try in the future that may once again change everything and change the paradigm?
When I made those changes, they didn't feel like changes because it gradually went from one thing to another, and it sort of grew logically, time-wise and place-wise and everything. There's no more surprises. Life's too short, and I'm 42 now. I'm going to be 43 soon. There's no time to change anything anymore. This is it.
even when, say, you're 65.
Well, that's a good thing about it. Golf sort of satisfied my childhood dream of being a good sportsman. I really wanted to win the Olympics, and I wanted to win the World Cup skiing, and I wanted to win the Wimbledon in tennis, and just like every other kid, I suppose. But obviously, I didn't make it there. So I gave it up when I was 24 or 5. And then all of a sudden, out of a blue sky, when I was 28, I came to a sport where the age doesn't play such an important role, and you still can play well. It gave me a little bit of satisfaction because I was able to finish sixth at the European Championships, which is not great, but for somebody who starts at 28, it's pretty good. You wouldn't be able to do that in any other sport.
It sounds pretty good to me, I have to say. Alan Dawitski, thank you very much.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Alan Babitsky in conversation there with Jan Wellinger, and that program was first broadcast in October of this year. That's, in fact, all we have time for today. From me, Rob Cameron, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening, and goodbye.